Cumulative Review 4. Exercise 1.
Last year, my cousin and I were driving from Dallas, Texas to Savannah, Georgia, east on Highway 80, when the engine of our vehicle began to overheat. I pulled over to the side of the road, then looked at my cell phone. We were about 8 miles from the turnoff to Selma, Alabama. A name that's written large in the history of America. I knew that I should have checked out the truck before setting off, but luckily we were able to get help, so we didn't have to endure an 8-mile walk to Selma on a hot September afternoon. A man who stopped to help us managed to tow our disabled vehicle into Selma, but it was clear it would take a while to get it fixed. We weren't going anywhere that day. The man, whose name was Elijah, helped to run a local motel. He arranged for us to stay there that night. Then, amazingly, he said he wasn't doing anything much for the rest of the day and offered to show us around. I guess it had always been an ambition to visit Selma and learn more about the momentous events that took place there. So the chance of seeing the town through the eyes of a local was too good to pass up. Elijah and his brothers, several of whom still lived in Selma, had been young boys at the time of the civil rights protests. At the time, African American people were ostensibly free and equal citizens of the United States, slavery having been abolished a century earlier. In reality, they were persecuted in the southern states by a system which treated them as second-class citizens and denied them their constitutional right to vote. Early in 1965, the Reverend Martin Luther King made Selma the focus of his campaign to register black people to vote, something that was fiercely resisted by many white people in Alabama. A protest march was organized from Selma to the state capital of Montgomery, but the local authorities were determined to stop it. Elijah took us to Edmund Pettus Bridge, the place where, on March the 7th, 1965, a day which became known as Bloody Sunday, 600 peaceful marchers were viciously attacked by police dogs and beaten by Alabama police and state troopers. The march was quickly broken up, but what might have been a heavy defeat soon turned into victory. Images of the brutality used on the protesters, which appeared on national TV, sickened and enraged people around the country. As a result, many ordinary people descended on Selma to offer their help. The protesters made another attempt to march a few days later, which was also blocked. That night, a white priest called James Reeb, who had come to Selma to take part in the march, was murdered. Enough was enough, and the federal government stepped in. They ordered authorities in Alabama not to interfere with the marchers again. On March 21st, protected by the United States Army, 2,000 marchers set off again, many of whom had come to Selma from across the United States. They walked for 12 hours a day, sleeping by the roadside at night. Finally reaching Montgomery 4 days later, they were greeted by a crowd of 50,000 cheering people, black and white. "No tide of racism can stop us," Martin Luther King told the crowd, and he was right. It was really moving to walk through the streets of Selma and think about those events and how much things had changed since Elijah's childhood. Within months of the protests in Selma, the Voting Rights Act had been passed, safeguarding the right of all African Americans to vote. just 3 years after Selma, Martin Luther King was murdered. But by then, King had finally achieved many of his goals. The dream of equality that he had spoken of in that famous speech in Washington was no longer just a dream. It was well on the way to becoming a reality. The next morning, we went to get our car, then visited the National Voting Rights Museum. Then it was time to hit the road for Savannah, 1 day later than planned, but with an ambition fulfilled.